Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Just Wrestling No Politics Show.
Welcome to the first edition of the Just Wrestling No Politics Show, and I'm your host, Don Frank. First, I want to thank the band Fighter Group and their label Toya Records for giving us our intro song. The song is called Live Again, and it's available now on iTunes. Again, the band is Fighter Group, and the song is called Live Again. It's available now on iTunes. So let me tell you about myself and what the show is going to be about. Again, my name is Dom Frank. I'm a filmmaker. You can check out my upcoming supernatural thriller, The Church, on thechurchmovie.com or search it on IMDb, The Church 2015. But just as important as my passion for making movies is my passion for professional wrestling. So I decided to create a show where we just talk just wrestling. We'll be talking to wrestlers, referees, magazine writers, anyone that's been involved in the wrestling industry from the past and currently. The show is going to drop every Monday, so be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, and you're guaranteed not to miss a show. We'll also be on Stitcher, Google Play, all of the popular podcast outlets. My first guest is former WWE magazine writer Brian Solomon. He has a new book out called The Pro Wrestling FAQ. The book is available at Amazon and all major bookstores across the country. Brian and I chatted last week, and this guy's a walking encyclopedia. He knows his wrestling. We talked about working for Vince McMahon, the current state of wrestling, wrestling history, and also weird stuff like watching Ric Flair promos back-to-back. It was a fun time. Enjoy.
The Just Wrestling No Politics Show.
Today we have Brian Solomon, former WWE magazine writer and author. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for being one of the first guests of the Just Wrestling No Politics show. And we have a few questions for you. I was reading something online about your new book that you have coming out called The Pro Wrestling FAQ. And this book is not affiliated with WWE, correct?
That's right. The first book I did, WWE Legends, was an official WWE book. And this is not. This is from an independent publisher. I actually haven't worked for WWE since 2007, so this is totally my own gig here.
Okay. So how did you get to start in WWE?
Well, believe it or not, I started by answering an ad in the New York Times classified. it sounds like too surreal to be true, but I was a writer, and I was in at this time in the late 90s, I was working for a book publisher. And it was kind of like an entry level job right out of college. So I was looking for a change of job, and but still wanted to write and edit. And I saw an advertisement in the New York Times. This is 1999, October 1999. I saw the ad with the big WWF scratch logo, and I just said, "What the hell?" I was a big fan, and I figured just as a goof to apply, just for the hell of it. And I honestly didn't even think I was going to get a call back. I figured a million people are applying to this job. And it was for copy editor for WWF magazine. And they called me in. And three interviews later, I got the job.
Well, that sounds surreal. I'm sure you were one of many.
Word.
Well, if you see an ad in the classified section, you're like, "Oh, that's not real." You know, you were second guess the validity of it. But it sounds cool. So you said you were a big fan?
Yeah, I had been a big wrestling fan, particularly WWF fan, from going back to the 80s. But, I mean, all of pro wrestling I was a general fan of, but I started watching wrestling around the time of WrestleMania 3. So by the time I got the job, I had been a fan for like 13 years or even more. So it was really kind of like a dream come true. I've said it before, but it really was a dream come true.
I'm a writer myself, but my dream job is still working for the WWE, and people are like, "You're crazy, you know, you're in the movies." I'm like, "Yeah, but if you have that passion for wrestling, you know, nothing kind of replaces it. I'm a huge fan." So that's cool. You got to get your dream job.
Yeah, it sure was. And, you know, even though by the end of it, it was, you know, you get kind of disillusioned after a while, and it's sort of some of the shine comes off of it. But I still look back on it as an amazing time in my life. And I would not, you know, if I had it all to do over again to go work there, I wouldn't change a thing. I mean, as far as going there, I mean, along the way, you might have made some different choices. But as far as taking the job, I'd do it again in a heartbeat.
So you said you were a fan of WWE growing up in Northeast. Were you a fan of the NWA or stuff like that, or strictly a WWF fan?
Well, that's the thing. You know, I, as you said, I grew up in the Northeast. I grew up in the New York City area. So, like, WWF was our wrestling even before, you know, WWF took over everything. You know, so even going back to the territory days, like when, you know, and when I was really young, and my earliest memories, even before I was a fan, going back to, like, you know, the late 70s, early 80s, it was still WWF because that's what was in my area. But as I got a little older, I'd say, like, as I became a teenager, I started to open my eyes up to a lot more wrestling that was out there. And we didn't get a lot of it on TV because, especially, I didn't have cable. So, like, I really didn't have anything to watch except WWF. There was the old WCW Worldwide Show, or, and even the NWA Worldwide Show, which used to be on, like, the middle of the night on New York TV. But for the most part, until I got cable as a teenager, it was WWF. And then I started expanding, largely because of the wrestling magazines. They were like my entrance. The old wrestling magazines used to have so much cool stuff about, like, NWA territories and the AWA. And in the Northeast, where, you know, where we had WWF, we actually, if you were like a real hardcore fan, it's like you wanted to know about those other territories. There was just something about it. There was like an allure to it because it was different from what you had. And we always had the old, you know, if you were a fan of wrestling in the 80s, there was the old urban legend, everybody used to say it, that the NWA wrestling was real. Okay. When we were kids, we all really believed that, all right, WWF, okay, that's fake. But the NWA stuff, Ric Flair and the Horsemen and Dusty Rhodes and Ricky Steamboat, we were like, yeah, that stuff's real. Like, that's the real wrestling. We really did believe that back then when we were little. But as I got older, you know, I got into more of the other companies, whatever I could get my hands on, ECW, WCW, and I just started reading and learning as much about it as I could. I just became fascinated with every aspect of it, and that's what I put into this book.
It's funny you say the magazines. Growing up in Philadelphia, I used to see the magazines at the 7-Eleven, but I didn't know who Abdul the Butcher or Rick, well, I knew Ric Flair was, but I didn't know all these other wrestlers that were on the cover. So one day I was coming from a convention, and we walked past the Civic Center going to the parking lot, and the NWA was having an event in Philadelphia, and I saw the Rock and Roll Express walking
up. Oh, boy.
And I was like, wait a minute. They look kind of familiar. I seen on Saturdays they had, you know, we had to turn the rabbit ears on your TV all the way to UHF. They had a show on Saturday sometime. I would catch it, I caught it like maybe one or twice, and I saw the Rock and Roll Express, and I was like, wow, okay. Okay, then I started following because I wanted to see more, and they became my favorite tag team.
Yeah, Philadelphia was, I mean, you guys were lucky in Philadelphia because I remember there was a period there where that was one of those towns where you had WWF and the NWA regularly running, meaning the Crockett organization. Living in New York City, they just didn't get anywhere near us. I mean, like, the closest, I guess, would be the Meadowlands, the Brendan Byrne Arena in New Jersey. But certainly, I mean, they weren't going to run Madison Square Garden, you know, or anything like that.
They can't, right?
No, they couldn't. There was even though, I guess, technically, I don't think it's legal, but there's an agreement, and there has been an agreement. There has not been a non-McMahon wrestling product in Madison Square Garden since 1960. So there's some type of an exclusivity agreement for sure there.
I've read that.
But,
yeah, I don't see how that would benefit Madison Square Garden, but I guess...
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem to be in their best interest. And, you know, WCW, I don't know if you remember this, but WCW ran the theater at Madison Square Garden a couple of times, I think. They did one or two shows there in the 90s, and it was a huge deal because it was like they were knocking on Vince's door. And this was right around the time that Hogan had jumped ship and Savage was there. I was at one of those shows. I was at the first one, and it had Bruno Sammartino was there as a special referee, and Pedro Morales, and Ric Flair wrestled Randy Savage. It was just a really bizarre day having WCW there and literally in the shadow of Madison Square Garden.
Wow. Yeah, Philadelphia is a great wrestling town from ECW to WWF, NWA. They just had the two NXT shows last week.
That's right.
Which were great. So who were your favorite wrestlers and who, like, inspired you to, you know, fall in love with this craft?
Oh, boy. Well, I would have to say, I mean, during my real prime years of being a wrestling fanatic as a kid, my guy was